Welcome back to episode 157 of the Guardian Project podcast. I'm your host, Andy, and last week I won with Maze's End in Commander, so it's true. I am a gatekeeper.
Ah, nice. Well, I guess no, that's a bad thing, isn't it?
I'm going to say in this instance, it's a really good thing.
It's cool.
I keep all the gates, I play them all out, and I'm a gatekeeper.
It's a hard alternate win.
We're going to change it. We're going to change this. It's now a positive thing.
It's gatekeeping is now a positive. You heard it first here on the Guardian Project podcast. And I am your other host, Mike. And there was a discussion in Wizards of the Coast R&D about a background that would grant your commander flying. But that was quickly dismissed with the statement, they're backgrounds, not back in the skies.
Backgrounds. I get it.
Please listen carefully.
This is the podcast where we talk about all things Magic the Gathering.
But mostly Commander.
Okay. So this week, this is the episode that almost wasn't,
because
we are up against literally all the odds. So welcome to summer. It's mm-hmm. Today's the first day of summer, correct?
Oh,
it's
I have no idea.
I'm pretty sure today's the first day of summer. And if not, it's the summer solstice. Mm-hmm. And Michigan said, I'm going to be 98 degrees outside.
Yeah.
And then Southeast Michigan said, oh, oops, we're going to have rolling brownouts.
Yeah, why not?
To the point that Andy's house will have no power. Mm-hmm. So the air conditioning goes out. There's no internet. There's nothing. And it's really hot.
Yeah.
So we were going to be recording much earlier in the day.
Right.
Fortunately, came back up, because if it wasn't going to come back, we weren't going to have an episode this week, because producer Ryan, my brother's getting married, and producer Ryan is his best man, mm-hmm. and the wedding is this weekend. Mm-hmm. So if we don't record, there's a good chance the episode would not have gone live.
That's
because
right.
He will be out of town.
That's right.
Because he does not live here anymore. So we are here making it, and I have plenty of Ice Mountain water as my house is cooling down, because it was real hot out today.
Yes. Welcome to the Guardian Project late night.
Late night. like pillow talk with Alan Allman. Is that a thing? Was that national, or was that like just us?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, well, it was a late night show, and I remember driving home when I was a kid, and my parents always listened to it in the car. So if that's a Michigan thing, then no one knows. But if it was like nationwide, then for those of you who listened, I guess you understand. But
yeah,
it was a really stupid reference, but late night, that's what that was. Yeah. So
I ended up going to the bowling alley while your power was out, because I was bored. And my girlfriend Kristen and I have been going down this YouTube rabbit hole of arcade games and really getting the itch to like go play at Dave and Buster's and stuff. And we said, hey, bowling alleys have claw machines. So we decided to just randomly go to the bowling alley and play a bunch of claw machine games. And I think we won like 11 things today. Like, we won a ton of stuff.
Like, and stuffed animals? Were you playing any? Okay.
Yeah, stuffed animals, like Squishables, Squishmallows, all these like branded things that I guess you can only find in claw machines in carnival games. It's a thing.
Oh.
I think we found a new pastime of like every couple of weeks we're gonna find out when they refill these claw machines at the bowling alley, and then we're gonna go every time they get full and win some stuff.
Does that bowling alley have one of those claw machines where it has like an iPhone 4 sitting at the bottom that nobody won?
It wasn't
one of those.
No. This is they have some really big stuffed animals at the bottom that I don't think the claw will ever be strong enough to carry over, but at least like it's a soft platform that all the other things are sitting on. I don't know.
Sure.
We're not experts, but we plan to be one day.
They'll win all the games for us.
Yes.
Speaking of games, Magic, it's a show we talk about.
It's true.
It's a show we talk about. It's a game we talk about on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And the survey from Wizards for Commander Legends Battle for Baldur's Gate is out now. We'll have a link to that in the show notes below. I took it today.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't do any of the like optional answers, which I don't normally like type out optional answers.
Sure.
It took me 7 minutes.
Okay.
So it really doesn't take that long. A lot of it is select all that apply. It does have you select your three favorite cards from the set. So I selected Baldur's Gate, Displacer Kitten, and then I selected Volo, Itinerant Scholar, just because I think it's a really cool card, even though I don't know if I'm actually going to build it. So I selected those. But it, you know, just asks you a lot of questions about whether or not you liked the etched foils, if you're collecting any specific cards from the set, if you like the, I think it's the rule book board. There's just a lot of questions. So go give them that feedback. It really doesn't take that long, and make your opinion known so that you can improve or get what you want in the future.
Did it ask you about whether or not you actually drafted the set and what the draft environment was like?
It, oh man, did it ask me? It asks if you draft,
okay,
and you select your favorite ways to play. So mm-hmm. I had said Commander's my favorite. I like Cube. I like Draft. And then I do play on Arena. You know, it tells you, it asks you how often you play those formats and stuff. But it, I don't think it asked, did you draft it yet?
Okay.
But I did give them, and it also, it didn't ask me my favorite colors this time. So I didn't get to pick blue and white. So dang. No favorite colors this time around, but I'll make sure everybody knows the next time you can pick your favorite colors.
Yes. Yes. We also want to say thank you to a brand new patron, Danny Harrison. Thank you so much. Welcome to
thank
the project.
You.
I know you did already message us and said that you already have your portion of the project prepared, and we appreciate that. And we will take the work and we will submit it. That being said, there's another project starting next week, and that's the one we were going to assign you to. So although we will take your work, there's still some more ahead of you. So keep on the lookout. Bring your TI-84.
TI-84. Okay, we all had to have those. And I remember my mom saying, this is the most expensive calculator I've ever purchased.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, honestly, I still use mine today.
Do you really?
Yeah, yeah. It's very helpful, the graphing capability on it. You could do everything on the internet, but it's nice to sometimes just have a calculator.
Do they have apps on our phones that are just the TI-84? Calculator. Is that a thing yet? It has to be a thing, right?
Yeah.
I don't work in math, so I don't know.
It's just the processor isn't dedicated to doing the calculations. So if you do something really, you might not be able to do something really complicated that you could do in a calculator on your phone, but absolutely. WolframAlpha.com. If you don't know about that website, it does math for you. It's pretty fantastic. I highly recommend it.
Oh, interesting. For all you math people, that was quite a tidbit.
That's if you don't like math, I highly recommend using it because it does the math for you.
I never knew how to even plug in the formula because the formulas were just, they were just too much.
Okay, fair.
You know, it was just too much. You know, you got that little cheat sheet and they say you can bring this to your classes and you can use the one things you write really small. And I was mm-hmm. like, I don't remember which formula I'm supposed to use right now, but I know I'm supposed to plug all these numbers in. So step one, learn how to do math. Step two, if you don't want to do it, go to that website.
That's right.
And if you're looking to support the podcast, you can head to patreon.com/guardianprojectpod and donate for any dollar amount.
And if you're looking for another way or an additional way to support the podcast, whatever platform you are enjoying the podcast on now, if you could subscribe, rate, review, and leave comments, we would be really appreciative of that.
Yes, we really appreciate all of you that listen to us. So thank you so much to our listeners and especially to our patrons. You keep our show on the air, and you can also find us online through YouTube, Instagram, or on Twitter. You can search Guardian Project Podcast. You'll find our website. You can email us at guardianprojectpod@gmail.com. Coil, what is on the agenda this week?
This week, we are going to be continuing a series that we've only done one episode for, and it was over a year ago.
I can't even believe it. It was right? A year ago.
So it's 54 episodes ago that we did a series where we talk about a specific set, and we're going to talk about whether that set did more for the command zone or for the 99, so our deck. And last time we talked about Dominaria, the legendary creature packed set, but this time we are going to talk about another set that people might think, you know, is directed towards us as commander players, and that is Battle Bond.
Let's go do some sports stuff. Battle Bond, a set that came out, oh my gosh, I can't even believe how long it's been, but it was a sports-themed and esports-themed set that was designed to be drafted with players. you can play with two-player teams for two-headed giant multiplayer games. And there are four-player games with two-player teams that share a life total. So in the set, we got to see some multiplayer mechanics. So let's actually start with the mechanics. The first one was assist. Assist came out in Battle Bond. It lets another player pay the generic mana cost of your spell to assist you in casting that spell. A card that I have run before in Noyandar. I think there was a white spell that was destroy non-land permanents.
So I pulled up a couple examples here of these, because there's you don't see them very often, right? The white one probably is the most common, and that's Play of the Game. And that is 6 generic and white with assist that says exile all non-land permanents.
Exile them. Yes, and that was really good in Noyandar. So if you're building a budget version, because the card is very affordable, it's cool if you want to play with some politics, because even if you're not playing in a 2v2 format, you can still get a friend to help assist you.
Yeah, just the person right ahead of you say, hey, save 6 mana and help me cast this board wipe, because we really need to take care of player A. You know, so we got it.
Yeah, someone's board that has things we can't deal with. If someone could help us, if someone could assist me, please, I would be most appreciative.
Yes. The next mechanic we have here is a mechanic that actually we see very often in Commander pre-cons nowadays, and that is the partner with mechanic.
Oh, great mechanic.
Yes, very cool. It's a variant on the partner ability, but it limits you to only be able to combine them as a commander with one other creature, one very specific creature. In addition, though, you actually get a benefit if you do play the partners with commanders in the 99, or if you play it in draft or something like that, and it's in your constructed deck. It has an enter the battlefield effect that actually allows you to search for the counterpart in your deck and put it into your hand. So it's kind of almost a replacement effect when it enters the battlefield if it's not used as your commander. So partners with this is the first time we saw it actually in the Battle Bond set. And then after this is when we started seeing it pop up in our commander precons.
Yeah. And we also have the, what was the secret layer with the,
the Friends Forever,
Stranger Things, which is another variant almost on partner with, cause it was Friends Forever. So it was partners with, but only partners with essentially this small pool of legendary creatures. So I like partners with a lot. I also like that, you know, you can have somebody else tutor for it. Like if you're running one of them in your deck, cause you're not running the pairing, but somebody else might have it. If you want to be a friend, you can let them search for it. You know, that's
true.
That's kind of cool too. That's kind of cool. the next mechanic was support, a mechanic that we also saw in Oath of the Gatewatch. So this mechanic boosts your or your teammates' creatures with +1/+1 counters. So when the creature enters the battlefield, or if there's a spell that has it that says like support, and then there will be a number. So support 2 or support 3 or 4. You get to put a +1/+1 counter on each of up to 2 target creatures, is how you get to do that. So you don't get to just spread it out on like a ton of creatures, but it's on the number of creatures that you're supporting.
Yes. I like a generous patron here from Battle Bond. It's one of my favorite support cards from the set. One that saw a lot of play when Hepatra, Hepatra came out before Generous Patron, I believe. But then, Generous Patron coming out. And Generous Patron has that support too. So the 3-mana, 1/4, 2 and a green, enters the battlefield support 2. Whenever you put one or more counters on a creature you don't control, draw a card. So this kind of helped. You could put it on your partner's card and be able to draw cards, or you can put it even on your opponent's creatures to be able to draw cards, which is cool. Speaking of which, your partner in this, so when you're playing Game of Two-Headed Giant, your partner is considered... after Battle Bond, part of your team. So this was a new term that was referred to in this set. Again, that specified either you or the person that is on your torso, because you're a two-headed giant, right? You're both
one
head
body,
on the
two
torso.
Heads.
That's right. So now, but in our commander format where we all play individually, your team just refers to you.
Yes. And finally, we had friend or foe. This came on cards where you got to label your friends as friends or foes, or I guess your pod, with a spell that gives a benefit labeled as friend and then a negative effect usually to those labeled as foe. So on cards like Zindersplit's Judgment, a sorcery for 4 and a blue, you choose friend or foe for each player. Each friend gets a token that's a copy of a creature they control, and each foe has to return a creature they control to their hand.
Yeah.
So
Really like the friend or foe mechanic, honestly.
This plays really, really heavily into politics. Yeah. I love doing that in Commander. Or if you are at a point where somebody is so far ahead, everybody's your friend except for one when you're, when you're in the arch enemy theme there for a bit. So we got a lot of mechanics that play very well. In Commander, I guess your team doesn't necessarily do a ton in Commander here, but in the command zone, we're going to talk about the command zone, and we're going to talk about cards that benefit the 99. So this set had 14 legendary creatures from the set and two legendary planeswalkers that can be your commander, because we got Will and Rowan Kenrith in the set, which was super exciting. 10 creatures and both planeswalkers with partners with, for a total of 22 commander combinations, because the partners with legendaries can be commanders by themselves if you want to do that. So let's do the top five most popular commanders from this set. Let's start. We'll do one first, and then we'll end with five.
Okay.
Number one, we were not surprised at all. Najeela the Blade Blossom came out in Battle Bond. Wildly popular right off the bat. Huge. Right now on EDH Rec, there's over 4,500 Najeela the Blade Blossom decks. It is a 3/2 legendary creature human warrior for 2 and a red. Whenever a warrior attacks, you can have its controller create a 1/1 white warrior creature token that's tapped and attacking. So just build it with generic warriors or strong warriors. Yep. Doesn't really matter. Just warriors. And then you can also pay white, blue, black, red, green. You get to untap all attacking creatures. They get trample, lifelink, and haste until end of turn. And then after this phase, there's an additional combat phase. You can activate only during combat. This goes infinite. I mean,
so many
if you
things.
Accidentally sneeze.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Najeela, super strong. We have not really spoken nicely of Najeela, but I will say when I'm playing in games with folks that are playing very high power or competitive games, I don't mind seeing Najeela. It's just a feel bad deck when you're playing against it in a casual game, because it just it does the thing so consistently. I feel bad that I have to remove Najeela like 3 times, because it still does the thing even when Najeela costs 9 mana.
Right. Right. And so it's just so crazy that that Najeela only has one color of mana to have to cast. Najeela only costs 3 mana to get out there. Like, I just feel like this is an extremely undercosted card for what it does, which is why it seems like so overpowering in these more casual things. Like, you get it out early, it starts doing things immediately.
And you get all 5 colors. Oh. It's, you know, tribal. I love tribal decks.
Yeah.
Even I, though, didn't build this one, and I was like, man, I just feel bad, because it does feel like maybe the way to make Najeela more fair is maybe not playing an optimized mana base, and maybe that's all I need to do, you know.
Sure.
I'm not really sure, but very strong commander. Not surprised to see it at number one at all.
No. But at number two, we have a commander deck that is in our local play group, our little local play pod. It has been menacing us with Chandra's Ignition for many, many years. And that is Zendersplit Eye of Wisdom and Okan Eye of Chaos. So we have our first partners with, the partners with commanders here being, you know, overwhelmingly popular when it comes to building
so
commander
popular.
Decks. So this is a blue-red combination that cares about coin flipping. So we know people love their random mechanics. I mean, I have my own red-blue dice rolling deck that hopefully will be debuting this week. So we love it here. So Zendersplit Eye of Wisdom is a 5-mana homunculus, 4 and a blue, 1/4 that has partner with Okan. At the beginning of combat on your turn, you flip a coin until you lose a flip. Whenever a player wins a coin flip, draw a card. Important note, just in case someone decides to make copies of your Zendersplit or something, any player that wins a coin flip, you get to draw a card. Now, Okan is also 5 mana for 4 and a red. You get a 3/3 Cyclops Berserker with partner with Zendersplit. Says at the beginning of combat on your turn, flip a coin until you lose a flip. Whenever a player wins a coin flip, double Okan's power and toughness until end of turn. So obviously you're using Zendersplit for card advantage and Okan to kill everybody. So it's a really cool 1/2 punch on some a very cool mechanic that cares about coin flips. We didn't see anything legendary creature wise that really cared about coin flips before these two. So this really debuted it, I guess, for Commander.
Yeah, it did. And I remember this being super popular. And when you open them, because in the Battle Bond packs, Zindersplit and Okan, the partners with creatures would always be together.
Yes.
And if I remember correctly, was Battle Bond the set where the first pack you picked, you took two cards just to make sure you got your partners with thing? I feel like when you drafted this, you did do a double first pick. I could be wrong.
That might be true. I think I may have only played sealed, honestly.
I think I've only played sealed, but I feel like this one was similar, and it's because if you took Okan and you had to pass it and you didn't get Zindersplit, that felt really bad. So I think this was the set where you got to pick two in case you wanted to get your partners with. But I could be completely wrong and misremembering it. But I have this deck, and I love this deck. I will say, though, it does add time to the game because you do have to do all those coin flips. There's a lot of triggers. But it does all the things I want to do because Zindersplit just draws me so many cards. And then Okan is a version of Voltron. So winning with 21 commander damage, that doesn't make me feel bad because when I do it, it's in a single swing. I'm not usually targeting one person. Mm-hmm. I usually win like four coin flips. So it doubles to, you know, six and then 12 and then 24 and then maybe even 48 on four coin flips. Mm-hmm. And then I just swing and I likely have something that's either giving it evasion or trample, or I'm going to throw it at somebody with a fling like effects. You sacrifice it and deal damage to somebody equal to its power. This was, and probably still is, one of the perfect Voltron style commanders because it gives me two options that does all the things that I kind of want to do.
Yeah. Plus it's in, you know, arguably one of your favorite color combinations. I think in your head you might like Izzet more than Azorius. And one day I'm going to make you admit that, but
I might, and we should do, you know, well, I have to look at my commander deck to see what my color splits are at this point, because I have built far less blue white than I have other things.
Right.
Recently, but this has, 1,700 decks on EDH Rec. And then also this one got a secret layer.
Oh yeah.
That was based on Gavin Verhey's personal build of the deck, and it got special artworks for some cards, like the actual Zindersplit and Okan, and a few other cards. I feel like Krark's Thumb gets a special artwork in that, and I can't remember the other. I feel like there were like four cards, maybe five.
Yeah, I think Propaganda was one of them. There was a couple other ones that like weren't specific to coin flipping, but they still have really cool artwork.
Sure. And I don't think those have arrived yet.
They have not, because I ordered one.
Okay, you did.
They got so delayed to like October, and they talked about sending like a compensation pack of something to people who were already charged for it early or something. But
okay.
I don't know whatever came of that. I didn't see anyone like actually receive any compensation packs or who is able to get those packs and who's not. So might have to look deeper. Maybe Wizards will say something a little bit later.
Yeah, I just remember seeing that this obviously was, and I think this was pre-ordering at the time when I was at MTG Vegas
maybe
last year.
That could be.
So I feel like it's been a while, but I know that obviously EDH Rec only has data for the last 2 years, right? Mm-hmm. But 1,700 right now for the last 2 years. But I'm wondering if this will jump up when all of those decks arrive and people upgrade, and because I didn't personally order it because I already have the deck built.
Right.
And for me, it would just be getting those alternate art cards, which I figure I would just buy singles of. But I'm wondering if with a bunch of people buying it, if they'll log the deck and we'll see this number shoot up. So
I think,
but I don't, I'm not surprised that it's number two, and I'm not surprised. I think it'll stay number two. I don't think it's going to overtake Najeela, but I'm not thinking the next pairing here is going to overtake it. But number three is the partners with pairing Peer Imaginative Rascal and Toothy Imaginative or Imaginary Friend. So Peer Imaginative Rascal is a 1/1 human for two and a green. It has partners with Toothy, and it says if one or more counters will be put on a permanent your team controls, that many plus one of each of those kinds of counters I put on that permanent instead. And then Toothy Imaginary Friend has partners with Peer, and it's a 1/1 illusion for three and a blue that says whenever you draw a card, put a plus one counter on Toothy Imaginary Friend. And then when Toothy leaves the battlefield, draw a card for each plus one counter on it. So we have 1,222 decks at the time of recording. And I think these cards both play well together. And these ones, unlike Zindersplit and Okan, play really well separated from each other entirely in decks that sometimes have nothing to do with each other.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think that's what overall, and I think the data will show that these are the two most popular cards in the set, just both as commanders, as partners, commanders individually, and in the 99, these are being played all over the place. Their effects are ridiculously good. Obviously, Pyr is being played in all of your counters deck that have green to get extra counters, whether that's energy counters or +1/+1 counters or loyalty counters on your planeswalkers. Mm-hmm. And Toothy is just a good blue creature that gets counters by drawing cards, which guess what? You do that at least once a turn unless you skip your draw phase with that one creature that makes it so that you skip either your untap draw or combat phase or whatever that card is. But
yeah, for all intents and Toothy doesn't even have to die. Toothy just leaves the battlefield. Yeah. So if you have six counters on it and someone goes to board wipe, you can just return it to your hand somehow or let it die, whatever. But drawing those cards, I've also seen somebody have like 30 counters on it and I've returned it to their hand and then they deck themselves.
Yeah.
So that's fun too, because you got to see every card that you put into your deck, which really, I mean, that's the goal. So
I
like this. We also have this in our local play group. So we have a friend that plays Pyr and Toothy, but I see Pyr more often than not played in +1/+1 counters decks and then also like super friends decks. So loyalty counters, like you mentioned, it works really well with them. I see Pyr and it costs 3 mana. So it's at that tipping point where you're like, it's low enough and I can afford to I can afford to throw it out there. And if you really want to remove Pyr because you don't want me to get one extra loyalty counter right now, then go for it. Mm-hmm. It's a creature you're removing and not my planeswalker then, I guess.
Yeah, I really, really love it. I think the only thing holding it back from being played even more is you're limited to two colors. But man, if you're going to be limited to two colors and +1/+1 counters, at least it's these two colors in Simic. You could do a lot. You could do a heck of a lot with these two. And you can build it casually. You can build it really strong. I mean, there's probably decks out there where you're, drawing your library on turn four with a giant Toothy or something with this sort of deck. So, really, really expansive and different kinds of gameplay styles that you want to do with it. Really, really like that partner pairing. I tend to play them more in the 99 though, but I think that's kind of common.
I think it's common for me
for all of these only because they're all two color pairings and I play a lot of three color decks. But
that
I know
makes
you,
sense.
But you play a lot of two color decks and you still play these in the 99 a lot. So
yeah, I play those two in the 99. The next group that you'll go over, I don't think I play them at all.
Oh, okay. Well, I do play these two in my Abzan tokens deck. And these are a black-white combination of partner with. We are at the number four slot for commanders, and that is Krav the Unredeemed partnered with Regna the Redeemer. So this is actually a little bit higher costed in the mana cost, which I think that's what's mostly holding it back from seeing a lot of decks being made. But Krav the Unredeemed is 5 mana, 4 and a black. You get a 3/3 demon with partner with Regna that has pay a black and sacrifice X creatures. Target player draws X cards and gains X life. Put X +1/+1 counters on Krav the Unredeemed. It doesn't say you draw those cards. It does say target player. So you can deck someone with that ability or something. Pretty cool. And Regna is 6 mana, 5 and a white for a 4/4 angel with partner with Krav with flying. It says at the beginning of each end step, if your team gained life this turn, create 2/1/1 white warrior creature tokens. So kind of the idea of them being combined is with Krav, you can, sacrifice one of the tokens, draw a card, gain a life, end step, make 2 tokens with Regna, and you can kind of build up your whole board that way or sacrifice all of them. I really like Krav's ability as a sacrifice outlet. It's the closest thing to a free sacrifice outlet without being a free sacrifice outlet, since you only have to pay 1 mana to sacrifice any number of creatures that you control, versus, 0 mana to do it or 1 mana per creature that you sacrifice. So I really like the in between there. And don't sleep on Regna's ability to make 2/1/1s, because it is at every end step. It's not just your end step. So at the end of each end step, and Krav's ability being able to be instant speed, you could do it on every turn. I haven't seen this commander deck, but it does work. This commander deck does work really well. You might have to play fast mana to get your commanders out quickly enough to be impactful. Maybe that's just my opinion, though.
No, I do think you're right. I mean, to an extent. I mean, it depends. Obviously, this is one of those decks where you want to make sure that you're playing with the right power level. Yes. Because there are newer commanders coming out that just do so much now of at like face value that waiting until you have six mana and then at the end step to get your first two 1/1 white warriors, you know, right. I mean, you can play Krav a turn earlier. That's just my opinion. This is a little slow for our local play group. Mm-hmm. But when I play at the LGS, this is the perfect power level. Cause I would like the games to go a bit longer, yeah. But I'm certainly looking for this in a, mid power level deck.
Sure.
That's where I think that this falls. I when we were prepping for this, I didn't play against Regna and Krav at all this year, and I didn't play against it in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't go back all the way to 2020 to look because I was doing a lot of filtering. And I was like, oh gosh, this mm-hmm. is taking a lot longer than I thought. I just don't think that this one is as popular as like Pirentuthian Cinder-Split and Okan. And yeah. That might be the reason, but I do think that Krav is played in the 99 and Regna might be played in the 99 of a lot more decks than it is played in, I guess, as like individual decks.
Yeah.
Based on EDH Rec, the numbers don't say that, but from what I've seen, cause I see Krav come out, just not in the command zone.
Krav's a really good sacrifice outlet. Like really don't sleep on that. I know he costs 5 mana to get out there, but one black to sack any number, gain life, draw cards, put +1/+1 counters. I mean, he's nice. You should try it.
Yeah. Yeah. And now let's move on to number 5, which is not what I was expecting.
No. Nope.
I was expecting Will Kenrith and Rowan Kenrith to be number 5. I was very surprised that they did not hit this. But number 5 is actually a mono green deck with Grothama All Devouring. So this was the first thing that surprised me about this the notes when we were prepping this episode. So Grothama is a 10/8 worm that costs 3 green. So actually that's pretty good stats mm-hmm. for 5 mana.
Yeah.
And it says other creatures, this is just all other creatures have, whenever this creature attacks, you may have it fight Grothama All Devouring. So instead of actually swinging at somebody, you have it fight Grothama. And it says when Grothama leaves the battlefield, each player draws cards equal to the amount of damage dealt to Grothama this turn by sources that they controlled. So if you fought Grothama with a bunch of huge creatures, you could draw a ton of cards.
Mm-hmm.
I have only seen this because Lenny Woolley from the Scrap Trawlers has a Grothama deck, mm-hmm. and I've played against it plenty of times. So this one, I would say I play against Grothama more than I play against Pyr and Cinder-Split.
Okay. That's
because because of who I play against, I think. But this has 583 decks right now listed on EDH Rec. And I am very surprised because Will and Rowan Kenrith are at 567. So they're not far behind. They're literally just behind, but dodging this top 5 list is Gorm the Great and Virtus the Veiled, and then Korvath, Brightflame, and Sylvia Brightspear. They didn't actually make the list. They didn't make the top 5.
Yeah. I know the Grothama, I'm jealous that you actually got to, you know, play against a Grothama deck. I play Grothama in the 99 in one of my decks, and that's my Cody Secret Brash Tonner deck because it cares so much about fighting. But I actually was able to on someone else's stream, I was able to beat down Jason Alt with a giant Grothama.
Nice. Okay.
Turns out if no one kills it, swinging a 10 power creature is still very strong in a game.
Yeah. Seems like it's really, really good. So I like seeing we've got quite the spread of colors though.
Yes, we do.
Here. So we have a mono white creature, a mono green creature, a blue white deck, and then a 5-color deck.
Yes. And then all of our partners with color. Yeah, we have a white black partners with, a white red partners with, a blue green partners with, 2 blue red partners with, both Cinder-Split and Okan, and Will and Rowan Kenrith, which can be your commander, and then a black green partner deck. So yeah, very spread out. You know, if you only take into account the partners with as, you know, commanders together, then you're only looking at, you know, 11 different commander decks or 11 different commanders that you can have here. But yeah, I mean, there are definitely Peer individually and Toothy individually. You do see them actually come up in the numbers a little bit in their mono color. You don't see it a whole lot for any of the others. Although there is a wide variety of colors to pick from, once you pick your colors, there's not a wide variety of choices once you get there.
Yeah, nope, there's not. But now let's take a look at cards that are not in the command zone from this set. Coming in at number one, we just added them all together because it just makes sense.
You have to.
Which is all five of the Battle Bond lands, which we just saw get reprinted in Commander Legends Battle for Baldur's Gate. So that was very exciting. So we have Morphic Pool, Luxury Suite, Sea of Clouds, Bountiful Promenade, and Spire Garden. So these are in a bajillion decks on EDH Rec. So it is not even close how many decks that these are all in compared to other cards in the 99. I think these are home run cards. Oh, yeah. I love them. I put these pretty much right on par, in my opinion, with the lands that came out in Midnight Hunt, only because they feel very much the same. These just care about your opponents. The other one doesn't really do it until turn three because they need the two other lands so they come in untapped. But I view them in the same, I guess, pod, I guess, or if I were like trying to put lands into like categories.
Sure.
I feel they're very, very much the same, because if you draw it on turn one, I don't really care if it comes untapped. But if I draw it on turn, 10, the card can still come in untapped.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. I think if the only thing these lands are missing is them being fetchable from their basic land types, which would be, it would make them the next best thing next to dual lands for our commander format. So, but maybe the fact that it doesn't have that opens up the possibility that we'll get that in addition to these Battle Bond lands. Which
I cannot imagine. that. I cannot, but no, these are good. I hope that we get the other. Have we seen the other?
So we did. So Commander Legends printed the other two color sets. So we got Rejuvenated Springs, Spectator Seating, Training Center, Undergrowth Stadium, and Vault of Champions from Commander Legends, which also had, a few different printings, right? There's like the extended border printing of it and that kind of stuff. And, and Commander Legends.
I forget already so quickly those that come out. I run them in decks.
but it was nice to see, because the prices of the Battle Bond ones were actually pretty high, like even more. Morphic Pool, I think, was like $25, which is the blue black one. So it's nice to see this finally reprinted in Baldur's Gate. We got brand new artwork for everything. We got extended edition versions of everything. But Andy, old artwork versus new artwork, what do you like better?
I think I always like original printings, I'll be honest. Mm-hmm. But except, I think the exception here is Luxury Suite, because I hate that artwork.
Okay.
It's like the original one, it's just like a room.
Mm-hmm.
Look at this room that I've designed.
Yes.
I think I like the new one. The new Spire Garden's pretty good. It's giving me real gruel stuff. It's giving me real stomping grounds.
Yeah.
Now, vibes.
Now, this could be a trick question, though, and you could answer Zendikar Rising Expeditions are the best artworks for all of them, because they did get printed there as well.
They did, and I think that's the Sea of Clouds version that I have in my my Noyan Dar deck. Mm-hmm. But regardless, they are the OG lands coming from Battle Bond.
Yes.
So really good as our number one, I guess, the number one set of cards here.
Yes, number one through five. So on to number six, which is our number two on our list here. A card that I was very excited about, actually, when it first came out, because I was actually planning on being a pretty big spike in Commander right when Battle Bond came out. I was building my CEDH decks around that time, and we got Spellseeker. So Spellseeker for two and a blue. You get a 1/1 human wizard that said when Spellseeker enters the battlefield, you may search your library for an instant or sorcery card with converted mana cost two or less, reveal it, put it into your hand, then shuffle your library.
No, hold on, that's not what it says. It says you may search your library for Cyclonic Rift, reveal it, put it into your hand.
I've never searched for Cyclonic Rift with Spellseeker before in my life.
I think I literally always do.
I think
I'm the worst. So, I'm the worst.
So I only play Spellseeker in my Consultation cast deck, and I did it to go search for Consultation every time.
So what does that mean for those who don't know what consultation is?
So consultation is a spell called Demonic Consultation. For one black, it's an instant that says you exile the top 5 or 10 cards of your library. I don't remember exactly. It's been a while since I played CEDH. You name a card first. After the spell resolves, it's important. While it's on the stack, you don't have to name anything. After the spell resolves, you name a card, exile the top 5 or 10 cards of your deck. Please go read the card. And then after that, you reveal cards from your library until you exile cards from your library until you exile the named card. Then you could put that card into your hand. It works particularly well with Kess Dissident Mage, which allows you to cast one spell from your graveyard per turn, whether it's an instant or a sorcery. So you can cast Demonic Consultation, name Thassa's Oracle, get Thassa's Oracle into your hand. Then with Kess, you can cast Demonic Consultation again from your graveyard, name Basic Planes, a card that is not legal to play in your Kess deck, to exile the rest of your library, and then cast Thassa's Oracle and win the game like that.
So it is the top 6 cards, so we split the difference, not 5, not 10, it's 6.
That's right.
And don't name planes, name something fun.
Snow cover.
But anyway, planes. Spellseeker, really, really cool card. Really strong card.
Extreme.
If you don't want to play tutors and you're not looking for the consistency, or maybe you want to power down your deck, Spellseeker is not that, but Spellseeker is real strong and it is really expensive. This card is almost $40 now.
Yeah. And it was only a rare, Battle Bond again, didn't have those like special printings. We didn't have draft boosters and set boosters and collector boosters back then or anything. So there's only one version of Spellseeker. And it hasn't been reprinted. So yeah, it's all we got. It's the one.
And it's played in a crap ton of decks. Ooh, it is played in over 36,000 just logged. And that means that it's being played in a bajillion.
Oh,
decks.
Yes.
So it is played. It is beloved in casual and competitive. I think it's a great card. And
Notably a wizard. So.
And notably a wizard that I don't think I'm running in Kaza, which seems probably like a mistake, because
you could find the mana
value
stuff,
of
right?
my X, the mana value of my large X spells is only 2.
Oh, true.
Because there's an X, so maybe I should add spells.
And your untapped spells are usually that cheap too, right? Like Twiddle.
Yeah,
is...
if I need one. Yeah, it's pretty good. Let's go to number 3, which is a card we talked about already, but this is on its own, Peer, Imaginative Rascal. So this is in, when you're looking at this card on its own, it's in over 12,000 decks logged. That's a ton. So this one is also super popular. It's redundancy encounters theme decks. If you're looking, running blue with it, or you're running this in an Atraxa deck, I see Peer in Atraxa, I see Peer in Joda Planeswalkers, I see Peer in so many decks. You can just, win the game pretty easily off of Peer and, getting a couple extra counters that you needed. Because turns out accelerating those really changes the game.
Do you run Peer in any decks right now?
I have Peer, I think, in Joda, in my Joda Planeswalkers deck.
Okay.
I think,
that makes sense.
I think that's it. I ran Peer in my Vorl of the Hulkblade deck. It's not together right now, but it is in that build. So when I, bring it back out for streams and stuff, Peer will be in there. It works really well.
Yeah, I know I play Peer and Toothy in the night. I really love the partners with allowing you to search for the other one and put it in your hand on the ETB. I play mine in my Sultai Legendary Creature Clones deck, just because the only thing better than one Peer is 2 Peers, and then 3 Peers and 4 Peers. And it doesn't matter if you make clones of Peers or of Toothies, actually. You end up getting the same amount of card draw either way. So... Interesting fact there for all those people who are doing the exact same thing as me of Sakashima of 1,000 Faces and Peer and Toothy. But one card on here that I was actually very surprised to see, a card that has seen one reprint, and maybe that's why it is being seen in so many decks, and that is Together Forever. Together Forever is an enchantment for white. It says when Together Forever enters the battlefield, support 2. So you get to put a +1/+1 counter on each of up to 2 different creatures. And you can pay 1 generic mana to choose target creature with a counter on it. When that creature dies this turn, return that card to its owner's hand. So we do see a lot of counters coming up in Streets of New Capenna. from the oh man, I can't remember this family. So
it's the Brokers, and it came in the Perry the Pulverizers.
Oh, pre-con. Okay, awesome.
So it cared with Cross Defense Contractor. It cares about putting counters on things, and you know, it works really well.
Yeah, it seems like a good, you know, any counters on creatures, obviously, deck that you just want to put the card back in your hand. I mean, I know that there's like Brood Moth and stuff out there that is going to bring things back from your graveyard if it doesn't have flying with a flying counter on it, and then you can use this enchantment to put it back in your hand after it dies a second time and bring it back out without the flying counter on it. And
yeah,
you know, it's not quite infinite. It's very sorcery speed if it is infinite.
So I ran this card, and the only reason I know this one, and I also was blown away that this was number four. I'll be honest. I mean, I guess technically it's eight if we want to count.
Sure,
you know, because yeah, otherwise we were just going to say the first one is five lands. And then there's that. But I ran this in my commander deck: Nakara Lair Scavenger and Yannick Scavenging Sentinel. So it was my keyword counters theme deck, and it was really, really strong. Because both my commanders always had counters on them, so when they would die, I would get whatever benefit it was that I was getting, and then I put it back in my hand. And it, once you pay the two white, right, that was the hardest part, was paying two white and feeling like, ugh, I didn't really do much this turn, because it doesn't do anything immediately,
right?
But it does have support too, so I guess there's that. But having one generic mana to protect your commander and ensure that I didn't have to pay the extra mana for the commander tax every time was super beneficial. But it's a really, for me, it's a super narrow card, because when I think +1/+1 counters, I don't usually think white. I usually think Simic.
Sure.
That I think I've just been conditioned because I've played Voril for so long that I'm just so used to that.
We've been talking about Pier and Toothy this whole episode. So
I know. I know. But Together Forever works really well. And I do like that we are getting some support in a different theme other than just like blink in when we got the cards from New Capenna Commander. So like Cross and Perry the Pulverizer that had the shield counters in general that came with New Capenna, you know, that kind of matters. So, but again, yeah, I'm really surprised Together Forever made the number four slot.
And maybe there is a white creature that has choose a background that will go with like Master Chef, that enters with a +1/+1 counter and all creatures you control enter with +1/+1 counter. So maybe I don't know what white creature would go with it, but you know, with the background Master Chef, maybe we'll see. Maybe I'll try to force something just to play Together Forever and make it an even more popular card. We're going to bring it up the list.
Yeah, it looks like Together Forever is played in decks like Felissa, Fang of Silverquill, Zabaz, Breena the Demagogue. So, I mean, like, I see it. It's like, oh, this works. Yeah, 100%. Like, I see it. I just don't see these commanders as often, other than Breena here. I don't see these other commanders so often. So, nice seeing a card surprise us here. And then number five, Toothy. So Toothy, Imaginary Friend, just by itself.
Yes.
You know, this is in, all, you know, 10,500 decks just logged. So it's
in a good ton card. Of decks.
Which means that Together Forever, by the way, before you move on, was in 1,100. 11,100. That was insane to me.
Yeah.
I would have never called that.
It has to be because of the pre-con effect, right? Of people just uploading the pre-cons. I don't know.
Who knows? But I was blown away. But Toothy, number five here, major, you know, for card draw decks, +1/+1 counter theme decks. If you're playing it, with Pier and Toothy in a deck, I played Pier and Toothy in Voril. So I played both of them in there so I could grab one and you tutor for the other. Hopefully you don't draw them both, because that's the worst. You want to only draw one so you can get a free search.
That's right.
And then it really, you know, it doesn't, like you said before, it doesn't need much because you're going to draw a card every turn.
Yep.
You know, it says when you draw a card, put a counter on it, so that you do that every turn. Everybody does that every turn unless you're playing cards that don't let you do that, like Marlin of the Morn Song or something else that says no one draws. We tutor or we just skip our draw step.
That's right.
You know, so, but otherwise, Toothy's just really good.
Yeah. So. And it, you know, it could be a threat. You could swing with it. And I know we talked about it before, but the fact that it says leaves the battlefield and not dies or return to your hand or whatever, just any way it leaves the battlefield, it doesn't matter how it leaves. So the only thing, I guess, you could phase it out and then it wouldn't really leave the battlefield, but, and you wouldn't get to draw. But other than that, so other than phasing it out, any way you get rid of Toothy, you're gonna do it. So swing at someone with your giant 20 power threat. What are they gonna do? Make you draw 19 cards? Thank you very much.
Exactly. So we talked about the top commanders. We talked about the top cards. Anything else that sticks out to you from the set? What do you got? What do you got for us?
You know, the whole, like, the friend or foe cards, I don't think are seeing like a ton of play, and I kind of wish they were, because it, like you said, it's really cool with the political stuff. It looks like, when I'm looking at the list here, Peer's Whim is like the number one, and that is a 4-mana sorcery where your friends get to search for a land and put it on the battlefield, and your foes sacrifice an artifact or an enchantment. That's the one I see most often, and I probably see it most often because it's ramp, but it could search for any land, which is very, very cool, especially even at 4 mana, it's well costed. Being able to also then get rid of an artifact or an enchantment is a really cool added bonus. Yeah. But I just wish that the other ones, I guess, were a little bit more powerful, more enticing. I mean, Korvoth's Fury is one that you can either wheel or deal damage equal to the number of cards in someone's hand. So the wheeling part is nice for disruption. That one is actually the one where choosing friend in order to wheel someone might sometimes feel like you're choosing them as a foe, which I kind of like about Korvoth's Fury. But like the other friend or foe ones, you just don't see them. And I kind of wish they were stronger so that you would.
Yeah, I think Arena Rector, I was expecting to be a lot higher on this list, I'll be honest. Okay. So Arena Rector is a 1/2 human cleric for 3 and a white. It says whenever it dies, you may exile it. If you do, search your library for a planeswalker card and just put it onto the battlefield. So it's almost a $20 card, depending on where you purchase it. Mm-hmm. So I understand it's kind of expensive. I'm just surprised it's not higher, I'll be honest. Yeah. I have it in my Super Friends deck, but I think it's because I play 5-color, so maybe folks that are limiting their colors for whatever Super Friends decks they're playing can't play it. It's possible.
It's tough to limit yourself away from white in Super Friends. Like, most of the planeswalker tutors and everything, if you're playing with them, are in white. But, you know, I had a Nicol Bolas Super Friends deck, so I experienced that. So it's not impossible. It's not even improbable. But for like your Atraxa decks are playing white and everything. But I think it's just because it's Super Friends decks. Like Arena Rector is probably a quote unquote must have in your planeswalker decks that have white, but the number of planeswalkers decks with white overall might just be, you know, low compared to the +1/+1 counters decks, you know.
And then the other thing that I was surprised, I know we mentioned before, but Will and Rowan Kenrith, just as partners, I was surprised not to see them. They have the really cool Battle Bond promos, which if you got them in your pre-release kit that were like the date stamped, they had different artworks, which is really cool. I do think that maybe I thought this because we have some folks at RLGS that play Will and Rowan Kenrith Super Friends. So I'm just used to seeing it. So when we go up to one of our LGSs, this is a pretty common thing. I would say, I mean, maybe not this year, but when it had come out, I probably played against this deck once a week for a good 6 to 8 months. So I just, maybe it's just my perception that Will and Rowan are much more popular.
I think if we looked at the numbers back when Battle Bond came out, we would have seen Will and Rowan and Kenrith decks being even higher than the coin flips decks and the Najeela decks. But I did see one more thing I did want to mention. I know before the episode started, I don't think we said anything about it. I was talking about how I remember Gavin Verhey saying something about how this set was related to esports, but I couldn't remember exactly how. I found the card. It's called Sentinel Tower. This one is kind of like, it's a Storm-esque card. Four generic mana for an artifact. This is whenever an instant or sorcery spell is cast during your turn, Sentinel Tower deals damage to any target equal to 1 plus the number of instant or sorcery spells cast before that spell this turn. This is actually one of the towers that you have to like fight against in the game League of Legends that actually does get more powerful every time it shoots you like in a row with its cannon or whatever. So every shot does a little bit more damage every time it hits you. So yeah, I do remember him talking about that Sentinel Tower League of Legends inspired card in the set. So yes, it is officially an esports themed set.
I think this is a really fun set. One that we didn't get to draft or play or play like Two-Headed Giant too much of. It was like right at that time where we were starting to get more interested and we weren't like as invested as we are now. So I'm excited to play with sets in the way that they're intended, like Battle Bond had been built for. But it's time we answer the question. Do we think the set provided more for the Command Zone or for the 99 now that we have discussed? What are your thoughts here?
I think
you have to pick one.
Oh, I don't think it's much of an argument on my side. Battle Bond did way more for the 99 than it ever did for the Command Zone for me. I'm not sure I even built a single commander from Battle Bond, but I use so many Battle Bond cards, and I mean the lands for sure, but the partners with go in my decks a lot. Najeela is a human that goes in my Morrifon humans deck, so you know I do play a copy of Najeela amongst my cards in my stuff. So, but I can't say that I've actually built a legendary creature from Battle Bond as a commander. So, absolutely for sure, in the 99 is what Battle Bond did for me and what I think it does for the majority of the people out there. But Andy, what about you?
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think it's close. I mean, we see a ton of Najeela. That's cool. And Zindersplit and Okan, I see very, very often. And I play my own, so that's really cool. But I play Peer and Toothy in a lot of decks. I think the Battle Bond lands alone kind of tip it to the 99 in my opinion. But Spellseeker, wildly popular. Peer alone, Toothy. Together Forever, it says, is here. But some cards that, you know, didn't make our list, you know, cards like Bonus Round, things like that. There's just a lot of popular cards that, you know, we couldn't talk about them all. Okay, we couldn't get them all, but
if we had
I think it did a lot more.
If we had this podcast when Battle Bond came out, we would have talked about all of them.
We would have. Yeah. We would have. That's just the fact. That's just the fact. So, all right. You heard it here. In our opinion, we think that Battle Bond did more for the 99. We want to hear what you think, though. You know, if you're in our Discord, send us a message. Send us an email. Tweet at us. Do you agree or disagree? And that's going to wrap it up for this week. Thank you all for listening. You can find me on Twitter if you're looking to chat, at Andy Flory.
And you can find me on Twitter at Wormcoil Engine. We want to give a special thanks to Ryan Nichols and Chris Wolf, who handles all of our producing and our graphic design. So thank you to the both of you for everything that you've been doing for us up to this point. We really appreciate it all. And to all of our listeners out there, thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode, and we'll talk to you next week.
Stay cool, friends.
Yeah, please.